I'm so excited. eBay auction, Back to the Future. Have you been following what's been going on, Brian?
Oh, yeah.
Amazing. There's going to be, what, like 1,200?
1,500
hoverboards available on eBay.
No, it's not the hoverboard, Scott. That's,
yeah, that, yeah, it's the hoverboard.
No, no, those are
from Back to the Future. It's the Back to the Future.
Those are pretend. It's the shoe though. It's the Marty McFly shoe. It's the shoe from Back to the Future too.
I thought it was. Well, okay. The shoe's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty.
The shoe is awesome. Power laces. We've been waiting for power laces for so long.
It's not power lacing either.
Oh.
This is Tech Bacon, a weekly conversation about the latest in technology, new media,
and random foodstuffs. We're your hosts. I'm Scott Gold.
I'm Brian Bishop, and this is episode number
29.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the show. It is September 10th, 2011. Welcome to Tech Bacon.
Welcome, everybody. I am Scott.
I'm Brian, and we have nothing earth-shattering has happened.
Not groundbreaking,
yes,
but always interesting.
Yeah, lots and lots of really, really cool stuff. Google actually had another interesting acquisition. There's some stuff with that Apple-Samsung, suit thing, and an interesting announcement from Adobe. But do you want to go and actually start off with, recapping that Nike business?
Yes, we'll have a little info. So all this information started to come out a couple days ago about Nike releasing the power laces that were seen in Back to the Future 2.
The Air Mag, as they are apparently known. I didn't know that when the movie came out, but I guess it says it in the back of the shoe in the movie.
So the Air Mag, it had when Marty put his foot in it, it auto-laced itself. And it had like a blue light up Nike symbol.
Yeah. And right. they look like, gray boots made out of, soft cloth, but with the Nike logo.
Right. I mean, they were cool.
But all the better to hoverboard with.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. So Nike and there was these rumors going around. There was a teaser commercial that came up on YouTube with all these Air Mags in a closet. And so it turns out that Nike is releasing 1,500 of these Air Mags on eBay in an auction for charity for the Michael J. Fox Parkinson Foundation.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's very cool, actually.
Yeah, and the first pair sold actually there was an auction as well. There's like an LA and I think it was a rapper from the UK. Like $75,000 or $85,000, like a lot of money.
A lot for – and I mean, shoe collecting is a very big thing and these are – up there for all these shoe collectors.
Yeah, and also it was really cool. There was like a matching fund. I think it was a Sergey Brin from Google and I want to say his girlfriend.
Yeah.
They started a matching foundation up to $50 million. Whatever people go and,
purchase these shoes for.
They will match it for the foundation, which is really, really
pretty
awesome.
Pretty awesome. Yeah. Now, the one gripe that people have had is there are no power laces in these shoes. They're exact replicas except for the actual power lacing feature.
So, in fact, they're not exact replicas at all.
At all. It's disturbing.
Because I got excited. I'll be honest. I saw that and I was like –
oh, I got so excited.
This is amazing because I want the shoes that lace themselves. Even if they're heavy, even if it's not practical.
We all wanted them.
Because that is – then it's like,
you're living in Back to the Future
too. Yeah, the movie came out in 89. It is official. Then you are living in the future. You have your shoes that lace themselves, a computer in your hand.
You have your Quantum Leap computer
exactly.
In the hand.
Exactly. You have, Ziggy is telling you where you're going next. Right. And Dean Stockwell and you were buddies and smoking cigars.
I want to live in that future.
It's going to be a sweet future.
And hovering on a hoverboard.
Yeah. Not the pink one, though.
I know. But it's still – I would still take a pink one.
I want a black one.
I would take any one.
Does Mattel even exist anymore?
Yeah, they do.
Okay. I don't know.
And they make Barbie?
It's Barbie's hoverboard. That makes sense. Did he borrow from a girl in the movie?
Yes, he did. A little girl. Just like in the first one. Remember,
she
has it as a scooter.
Right. And he pulls the thing off the top. That's right. Well, that makes sense then.
Yes.
Because Biff has the scary one.
The dog with the big power thrusters on the back.
Call me crazy, but I think that is the droid of hoverboards.
That's
just in terms
really
of like
funny.
In terms
that's
of like,
so
you know,
funny.
We're scary robot aesthetic.
That totally is.
Right?
It totally is. So no power laces, but there was a cool video, a commercial that came out that Frank Marshall directed.
Yes.
With
the producer of the movie.
Produced Back to the Future. And with Christopher Lloyd and Bill Hader.
From SNL.
From Saturday Night Live is in it. And it's funny, like Christopher Lloyd runs in the room and he's like, can I get the power laces? And what do they say? They say,
he's like, oh, they basically comes in. He's like, oh, I want to get the shoes. The doc thinks it's 2015. And he finds out that it's 2011 accident and the time machine must have messed up and they don't have power laces because of that. And then
not till 2015.
Yeah. I think it's the head designer of Nike actually that's there behind the counter. This is like, no, not till 2015, which is a joke because of course, the movie was set in 2015.
Right.
But also Nike has a patent on power laces.
They do? A real true to life patent on power laces.
Yeah, and they're selling these as the 2011 Air Mag. So how much do you want to bet in 2015
we're getting some real power laces?
Yeah, for an ungodly amount of money, I'm sure, but you will be able to get them for real.
That'd be cool. It'd be really exciting.
And I will be
no flying cars or hoverboards, but power laces.
And dude, I will be 41 and buying those. No, no questions asked.
Me too.
Seriously.
Oh man. You know, I wonder, and we'll get into more of the tech stuff in a second, but I'm curious, do you think they're going to release more than these 1500 later at all? It's weird that they would just do, I mean, I guess they do that. They do limited run shoes all the time, actually.
Yeah. And what does, I mean,
maybe fun.
What does the 15 come from? 2015. Okay. That's where the 1500 comes from.
Oh, that makes sense.
I think it makes,
I mean, it's a great charity concept. I think it's awesome.
You know what I bet? If they are planning to go and release them in 2015, and honestly, they've been releasing shoes inspired by that design for years. I have no doubt they've been planning to release these things in 2015 for 10 years, probably.
10 years, yeah. I thought the same thing.
The amount of money that they could make if they sold these, even for like $400 or $500. Mm-hmm. They could sell a million of them. Seriously.
That's true. Yeah. No, that's true.
They make these. It gets the, you know, pumps, you know, primes the pump. It's a really, really great, you know, it's for a great cause. I mean, seriously, it's amazing. They're going to make a ton of money. If they sell a lot of them, they probably, you know, don't sell that many. And eBay, they're going for like, I think, $5,000 a pop. Mm-hmm. It's probably better if they just keep it that low and keep it rare until 4 years from
right.
now.
Yeah, yeah, you're probably right. And like I said, they do limited run shoes all the time where, you know, they're collector's items.
Yeah. And the truth is, I don't know how wearable these shoes really are.
They look kind of wearable.
They look comfy.
They do look comfy.
But what are you going to wear them with?
They look a little fluffy, though.
But they're not going to work with your skinny hipster jeans, Scott.
I don't have skinny hipster jeans. I don't have skinny hipster jeans. I can't wear those.
No, you totally do. And you wear it with, you know, monocle. No?
And my big handlebar mustache?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Right. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
That's only every other weekend.
But Marty McFly is wearing skinny-esque jeans.
He is.
They are rolled up, but they're skinny ass.
That's true. That kind of was the style back then.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I don't know what I would wear them with, but, you know, because you have to like put them in, you have to put your shoes or your jeans inside.
Right. Because they're so like poofy.
Yeah. But anyway, I still want them. I don't care.
So Back to the Future was trending on Twitter. Go figure. In 2011.
And it was funny. I was listening to the This Is My Next podcast, and they said that post about the shoes was their second most tweeted post of all time.
And that just shows how popular those movies are. I mean, seriously. The Back to the Future trilogy is,
or just the shoes, you know, it's like true. Crazy.
Like, well, it's something just in the pop culture lexicon, you know, like in the zeitgeist, it's just one of those things.
Totally. So if you have some extra cash and want to go and help a great cause, they will be they're doing 10 pairs a day, I want to say, for 15 days starting on Thursday, wasn't it, or Thursday or Friday,
something like that.
Yeah. So head to eBay and check it out. All sizes. Unfortunately, you can't try them on beforehand, so it would be a bummer if you got the wrong size. But
that really would suck.
Yeah, unfortunate.
Very.
Anyway, in other news, Google obviously, you know, it made big news with their acquisition of Motorola. And what I thought was a really, really weird combination of new media and old media, they bought Zagat.
Yeah,
was it Zagat or Zagat? I've always heard both.
I don't know. I've always called it Zagat.
So have I.
But it may be Zagat. I'm not sure.
Yeah, but you know, Zagat is you know Zagat.
I mean, Zagat it's Yelp before there was Yelp.
Yeah, and they
really
they
what
those,
it is.
Yeah, they had like those books that you can get, like pocket sized books that have, you know, restaurant reviews and everything, and
they were crowdsourcing reviews on paper, basically.
Yeah,
is what they've been doing for years and years.
Kind of a mainstay. Like I've had their guides before. I own they have an iPad and an iPhone app that are great. I use them and
well, you know, it's weird also because Zagat was also one of the first companies to go digital with the palms, with the handspring device you could get.
I had an old Palm Zagat 5 that I had the Zagat app on.
Yeah, you remember that?
Yeah.
I mean, like, they were always kind of ahead of the game on that, which is strange because you never think of them like that.
Yeah.
But it's also very trusted reviews.
Yeah.
So, like, I feel if I'm looking in Google Places or whatever it is and I see the Zagat review in there, and I don't know if they're going to be tagging them as such, which I think they'd be smart to because it has a very strong name brand. I'm going to trust that way more than a Yelp review.
Yeah. And it's interesting because what had happened, like, Google said they're going to use them for their local services and whatnot. And what Google had been doing recently is they've been at first they were incorporating Yelp, you know, search results in their servers and, you know, the services, and Yelp's like, well, hey, you can't really just skim our content and do that. And I believe Google said okay, and then kept on doing it anyway. And well, then they finally stopped doing it.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, did Google try to buy Yelp?
They did.
Okay.
They did for a lot of money. Yeah. Like $200 million?
It's a lot.
It was a lot.
Yeah, they turned them down. Yelp obviously is growing. They have check-ins. They have, you know, they're trying to expand their, you know, digital footprint of services, basically.
Sure.
But Zagat, they apparently, I read that they bought them for about $66 million, somewhere around.
Well,
that.
The other, you know, the report came out the next day.
Oh, you're right. That it was like 120. Million. Yeah, 122. Yeah. That's right.
It was like Wall Street Journal or something was reporting that.
Yeah.
So somewhere within that range.
And it's weird. Like, it's going to be great for Google to have that, you know, in their offerings and whatnot. I've never been a big fan of any of their services in that realm. Usually I just kind of tend to use other people like Yelp or whatever.
You know, I actually.
They need that, you know, like you said, that brand and that, you know, trust that.
You know, since the last redesign of Google Maps on the Android phones, I've found myself using Google Places a lot.
Yeah, because it's integrated in the Android application,
yeah,
right?
It's really nice now. And like, and I have Yelp on my phone and I do use Yelp too, but I have found that I use Google Places more now.
Well, it's built into the application, I'm sure. And obviously on the iOS side, it is not. So for me, it's like if I'm going to search something,
right.
I just go to the restaurant
in the map
destination.
And it comes up in the – it's all – yeah, exactly.
Definitely.
It's all in one. So.
It's weird. This is going to sound weird. It made me kind of sad though when I read this news because like I like them being like this – you know,
yeah,
old school,
know.
You know, keeping the guard, keeping the faith.
It's almost like the Michelin guide kind of the common man.
Yeah, exactly. and I don't want Hyundai buying the Michelin man. You know,
I know.
Which, I mean, it's weird.
Yeah, I know. I know what you mean. I'm mixed on it.
Yeah.
I'm mixed on it because I feel the same way as you. But I'm kind of excited to start seeing the Zagat reviews in the Google Places.
And we'll see what they could do is great. I mean, I just hope that they let them operate autonomously as their own unit.
Me too.
We saw a lot of stuff lately. Google's been like, you know, killing services left and right, you know, like, you know, Slide, all those apps that those people made have just been like, you know, Photovine had a new version that was killed like 3 days later.
That's so weird.
And I obviously think there's a, you know, with, you know, the new CEO at Google, they're kind of streamlining. They're kind of saying what our focus is, that kind of thing.
Sure, sure.
They haven't had the best record of like, you know, buying companies and having them do well. But I really, really like the brand. And I really, you know, I find it useful and I use it constantly.
And
so
I think,
hope it survives.
I mean, listen, the biggest reason is for their content and their name brand.
Right.
That's an asset.
Yeah.
So, it, you know.
And it's much different than any other kind of tech company acquisition because it's not about the talent. It's about the brand and the actual, you said, the actual content itself. And
yeah. It really wasn't a tech acquisition.
Yeah.
You know, it was a brand acquisition.
Yeah. Almost the kind of thing you'd normally see people license, but they just, you know, swallowed it all.
Correct.
Up.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, maybe Zagat was just, they were, you know, ready to sell.
Well, apparently they tried to sell a couple of years ago before the economic downturn, and then they couldn't. So they've been looking
to get out.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's just a husband and wife team that started it.
Yeah.
So, which I mean, it's kind of amazing.
It's
but,
crazy.
Yeah.
I wonder if they're going to stop making the little Zagat booklets.
I hope not, because I mean, there
people still use those.
I don't use it as much as I used to, but you know, we have one at the office, and it has like that, you know, that gold leaf on the corners. Mm-hmm.
I know,
iconic.
They're nice. These like little red books.
Yeah,
they're amazing.
They're just really iconic. So I hope those stick around just for nothing for the you know, just the nostalgia of it all. I guess they do have a purpose. You know, not everything needs to be digital all the time. I guess there's something really great about having that little book you can just pull out and be boom.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
I agree.
So very, very interesting. And you know, also on other Google news, they you know, the Google Music service, you know, beta has been out for a while.
Yes.
There was an Android app you could do stuff with. There was no way to really go and listen to the service on iOS devices. They now have a web app available.
Right. So it's an HTML5 version of the Android app.
Exactly.
Is really what it is.
You know, and it's kind of like stuff we've talked about before that doesn't – if you add it to your home screen, the Chrome does not go away. So it just still feels like you're in a browser, which I don't love.
Right.
But you know, all your content's there. It streams. It looks nice. It's not the best experience. You and I were talking earlier.
It's jumpy.
Yeah. It's slow. Yeah.
It's slow. Maybe it just needs a way faster processor. I wonder, did you try it on the iPad?
I did not.
I wonder how speed is on like the iPad because it's faster on the iPad 2 because of the faster processor in there.
Yeah. I don't have the iPad 2. I still have the iPad 1.
That's right,
so yeah.
That's right. But it's still
the same processor as the iPhone 4 just, but it's a bit faster.
And that HTML5 web app loads up on Android also. Same thing. It's still – so when you loaded it on your phone, did you get a message about using more cache?
I did.
That was it. I thought that was interesting. I'd never seen that before.
Well, no. It was like we had with the Amazon app did that. The Amazon
it
web
did?
App for Kindle. Yeah. Basically, it's asking for more.
I don't remember.
It can
okay.
you know, reserve certain amount of local storage on your device. So for streaming, you want it to be able to go – if you listen
to 25 megs. So that's
yeah,
you know,
so it
like
allows
an
you
album.
To, Yeah. So it's basically, you know, allowing you to pre-cache stuff. And so you can, you know, go through an album and have it, you know, be ready for you. You don't have to wait for every song to spool up.
Yeah.
It is weird. On all iOS HTML5 apps to this point, Netflix does something very similar, even though that's an actual app that's still, you know, it's, you're just looking at a web view basically within the app.
Mm-hmm.
It's not native scrolling, that kind of thing. It's not the UI view. It's frustrating. It's not there yet. You know, there are individual developers that have been working on, there's one called Scrollability, I believe, that they're trying to go and work on a better solution for the community to go and get true native feeling scrolling on iOS devices for web apps.
Mm-hmm.
But it is one of those things where, you know, Apple, you know, spent so much time for to understand trying to go and get, you know, the scrolling down. I guess it's apparently at 60 frames a second. It is like impeccable. That scrolling is so smooth.
Oh, yeah.
And anytime you see something that's not to that level on your iPhone, because that's what you're used to, it really, really bumps.
Yeah.
You know, it's really kind of a bother. And this one is, it was really, really weird. Like, because the Netflix one just scrolls really slow. This one scrolled fast, but it would like jump.
It's jumpy.
Like, yeah.
It has jump. It's very jumpiness.
Strange.
That's what I,
yeah. But other than that, like, it, you know, it is neat. You know, obviously with Safari, we talked about this before, you can listen to audio in the background and so you can move around to different apps and that kind of stuff.
And you can play, which I thought was cool, you know, that you can play songs within the app and still navigate throughout the app.
Yeah.
Without seeing the player.
Yeah, you can't go do other pages, which is unfortunate.
No, right.
Because, you know, whatever is the forefront window is the only one that's going to be active in Safari.
So if you open up like a new tab, does it not play?
I believe it flushes it. Well, you know, let's find out right now.
I'm very curious.
Let me go and check this out in the background.
I thought it was, it's not, you know, I'm really kind of liking, and which is something I never thought I would, I'm really kind of liking these HTML5 phone apps. Because I'm starting to realize how complex they can be.
Oh, it's kind of amazing, right?
Right?
It really is incredible.
Like, I always thought, oh, that's ridiculous. It's always going to be apps, you know, that you download and you put on the phone. But what we're starting to see come out of these developers on these HTML5 web apps is,
well,
kind of astounding.
You know, the spec is a lot more advanced than I think people really realize, just in terms of broad, regular folks really realize. And it's going to get, you know, even, you know, more impressive. Like, we're going to see, I mean, you know, in next, you know, as more things roll out, we're going to see, like, you know, direct access to hardware through like a browser, that kind of stuff. It's really incredible. That is where things are evolving.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? I didn't expect that. I really didn't.
You know, and it's both Google and Apple have been really on the forefront, I feel like, you know, pushing that forward. Like, you know,
mm-hmm.
their implementation on both sides is fantastic.
You know? And I mean, and even Amazon getting with their cloud reader. You know,
yeah, but in terms of like browser support,
you
need, because yes. mobile, I feel like it's taking off quicker
than on
mobile,
the
necessarily than
desktop.
On the desktop, because there's not as much need on the desktop.
It makes sense in mobile. It makes sense because it launches just like another app launches on mobile. On the computer,
well, it can, they don't, yeah.
But on the computer, you're locked, you're using it in your web browser.
Right. You're always going to see that as a distinct application.
I mean, I guess a way to not.
In Lion, it's interesting. There is a way in Lion you can go and basically, I forget they're called snippets. I'll put it in the show notes. You can go and create basically web applets out of sites
in Lion.
So they're
like smaller windows or something.
Yeah, and there's no Chrome, and it just shows up like
an
app. You know, so once again, like not,
once that's available.
Not touted, but it's there in Lion today. So very, very interesting.
Wow, that is actually very cool. I know this, you know, one of the nice little things on the Google Music, are you trying it where you can?
I am trying it. It's taking a while. Level. Once again, it is
slow. Well, it buffers
slow, like
the stream. Yeah.
But no, just loading up to the page.
It's slow. It's slow.
Yeah. I mean, and honestly, it's slow enough where I won't be using it, I have to say, right now.
I understand. I mean, yeah. It makes sense.
Yeah.
But maybe they may optimize it.
I think they'll get quicker. But yeah, right now it is, you know, it's not there yet. And obviously, I've been trying this on Wi-Fi. I haven't even tried it on 3G yet. I don't know how it would be on 3G.
Slow.
Yeah. But it's a good first step into where they're thinking, obviously.
Yeah. And another thing they did while Brian's loading this up, did we talk? Oh, there we go. We get some music.
Perfect circle.
So now we're going to go to another tab. Does it still play? Let's see.
Oh, interesting. It does.
It does. Wow.
I wonder if it's...
That's very cool.
That is very cool.
Look at that. Learning something new right in the middle of a Tech Bacon show. Right?
Do you like Perfect Circle, Scott?
Don't we all like Perfect Circle?
I don't know. You don't seem like you'd be a Perfect Circle guy to me.
Not really.
That's what I thought. Do you like Tool? You're not Maynard at all. No Maynard games came for you?
Depends.
Okay.
You catch me in the right mood.
Yeah. Well, once again, you know, you're a hipster. You have your skinny jeans and your mustache.
Only if it's cool to not be cool, then I will like it.
So I'm opening up a new tab just to see if this will work. Same thing. Very
same
slick.
Thing? Okay. Wow.
And I got to say, once again,
that's
you know,
nice.
you have that background audio process, you know, in Safari,
which is awesome,
which allows you to go and do pause and start from the shortcut menu from the tray. And
so cool.
I got to say,
it's a great feature.
It's one of those things that's been laid in, I think, since iOS 4, but you don't really get to use it until this kind of stuff happens. And one of these things I really, really appreciate about iOS.
Yeah, that's true. Well, that's nice. Nice to know. So those are the, wasn't there another Google thing? Something else on the Google front?
There was. There's news basically that, you know, obviously Honeycomb was the tablet-oriented version of Android that had come out. And Ice Cream Sandwich is the new one that was supposed to be, you know,
combine
dropping.
Everything.
And that was like, it was being touted as like a very, very big deal.
Nobody's really seen it at all.
No words leaked yet at all. Eric Schmidt recently said it was going to be coming out in October or November. But I guess this is my next. We're hearing that it's actually... it's not going to be as big of a deal as they'd originally heard. And a lot of that stuff is going to get pushed to Jelly Bean, which is the new one that should be coming out in early 2012.
May or may not be the name. That's apparently it's in contention.
Oh, really?
Yes.
What else would they do? They could call it Jell-O.
Jell-O would be a good one. Although that's a name brand.
True.
Isn't it? Right? Jell-O is a name brand.
Can I ask? Sidetrack.
Yeah. Jelly Belly. That's a name brand also.
The whole, you know, naming, you know, operating systems after tigers and lions, that stuff, that was fine.
And bears, oh my.
What do you think about the Android naming scheme of candies?
Me?
Yeah.
I love it.
Okay.
Come on. Look who you're talking to.
What was C? Was it chocolate chip cookie?
Cookie.
Wasn't it
cookie?
I liked it when it started. Now it's
donut,
like,
but
now
Claire.
it's like, oh, Jelly Bean, of course. So what's K going to be?
Krispy Kreme.
They should do that and have it, you know, and have a Motorola created, you know,
Krispy Kreme
branded device. Yeah, that would be great. But very interesting to see what happens with kale cookie. That's disgusting. Yeah. Once again, we talked about this last week. Very curious to see what
Klondike
happens.
We'll go. Jared just said Klondike in our chat room.
Interesting. Pretty good. Once again, that's a trademark name.
It is. It is.
Jared, if you anybody in the chat room, if you think of any, you know, names that aren't
non-trademark
with a
K dessert food,
yeah, bring it.
Curious to hear.
But yeah, I just very curious to see what happens. The end of this year, we keep saying it. So interesting. It's going to be a big point of contention. I think, you know, obviously iPhone and, you know, and Android devices, you know, Nexus Prime.
You know, also the Nook Color 2 is coming out. Nobody knows what the OS beneath it is yet.
Well, the Nook has always been Android beneath it.
It has. But is it going to be non-Android this time? Is it going to be more of a fork like the Amazon one?
I think it's exactly what Amazon's going to be doing. And that's going to be the real test here, right?
I'm curious, yeah.
Between, you know, iPhone 5 and whatever that's going to be and, you know, and the Nexus Prime and the new Ice Cream Sandwich phones and also tablets. Like, this is a real make or break, I feel like, for Android on tablets. If Amazon can come in, you know, and Ice Cream Sandwich doesn't have enough momentum.
It's a double-edged sword for that, actually, because if Amazon comes in and kills it, which is a good chance, does that hurt a regular Android OS for tablets in general?
Yeah. Well, that's what I wonder.
You know, it helps, but it kills.
Well, it's that thing too. Why do people go and want tablets? We keep talking about it. Is there an iPad market? Is there a tablet market? iPad is a specific thing. You do specific things for it. Kindle, it's a specific device. You do specific things with it.
Mm-hmm.
Tablet, what do you get the tablet for? Browsing, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, it's that thing. What is it better at other things than?
Here's it.
Yeah,
I do have to say. So, you know, I've had the touchpad for a couple weeks now. It makes me angrier and angrier every day that I use it. Because let me tell you something: the interface, the web OS, the little cards back and forth, is awesome. The speed at which I'm going through that, and I think it's the same thing you found with when you were using Lion at first with the swiping.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. It is so – I'm going back. Like once I got acclimated to this thing.
So intuitive.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It just upsets me. It really upsets me. But it was very funny. They have in their app store, which by the way, I barely use it for apps. I check my email and I look at the web on it.
Well, I mean there wasn't anything in it at launch and it hasn't
grown
beyond
that.
So, yeah,
you know,
it's
some
a bummer.
They have their app store, right? And there's that magazine, that built-in app magazine. Well, they came out with one for September, a new one. And it said in it, we know you've all heard that we're discontinuing the touchpad, but we here at Pivot, it's called Pivot, are still going to be recommending and supporting apps. We've had an unprecedented amount of app downloads in the past. I was like, oh, wow.
You know, I've got to say, probably the best named, accidentally best named magazine
Pivot?
Of all time.
Oh, my God, you're right. so funny.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Oh, that's so hilarious. Good. So anyway.
But yeah, like if they can come forward, you know, and if you know, if the tablet market is truly a, you know, a consumer electronic device, not a computer, but it's a device of like specific utility, because we all have our computers as general purpose devices.
Right.
Like, where's, you know, what do they, what is Google's next move then? I guess they have to, you know, they have to specifically define a product type that they want to go and bring
in. I mean, like, they're going to, it's going to, I almost have a feeling it's going to come, you know, if people keep forking off of this, you know, open source Android, Unix kernel, all that stuff. Google's going to be forced to try and compete on the hardware, on the device front with Motorola. I think that they may be just drawn down that road. I don't know.
Interesting, interesting. It is that.
We'll see.
Fascinating, because I don't think we've ever seen an experiment like this. We saw it similar with Windows, but Microsoft obviously held on to the OS. You know, you saw like the commoditization of the hardware, you know, and that kind of thing with Windows, you know, in the 80s and 90s. But you never saw this open thing, because Microsoft, you know, controlled it very, very tightly.
I mean, they licensed it like crazy, but they absolutely controlled
it. Yeah, people can never go and fork Windows and make their own proprietary OS for their device.
You can do stuff over it, or you could
skin it or whatever. But yeah. So.
Yeah. Speaking of, just an aside, since we're in this realm, is the Windows tablet that's apparently going to be released.
At Build, their developer
at Build
conference next week. Yeah.
The latest rumor I saw was that it's actually an Intel processor inside, and it's made by Samsung.
Because I heard that it was a quad core, which would basically take Intel out of the running and make it an ARM chip.
That was the original reporting, but now all of a sudden there's all these tidbits out there saying it's Intel. We never know. This is just a rumor, just something I've been reading. I read it on a couple different sites. Who knows the truth to it? But I'm excited to see this thing. And also it means that there's going to be a Windows 8 beta soon, and I can't wait to get my hands on it.
Do you wonder if they'll go and like give out devices to developers or demonstrate
apparently
like
that's
this,
what they're
and
gonna
then
be
do
doing.
Like the beta, like, you know, first of the year or something?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think it is very smart. All the noise they've been making with all these posts, and we should talk about the Windows Explorer thing briefly.
Windows Explorer?
The interface thing we emailed about.
I don't remember. Oh, my God.
I'll talk in a second.
My brain.
They're making so much noise. I think it is coming sooner than they've said. Because they said late last year, and there's been a lot more noise happening. But I think there's going to be much more movement beforehand. Windows Explorer, quick side note.
Now I remember.
There's a big blog post from Steve Sinofsky. Microsoft basically saying, like, you know, we're developing, you know, Windows 8 as a no-compromise interface and blah, 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 blah. And they said, we did all these tests. And people
are the most commonly used.
Yeah, and people don't use the items, you know, the tasks. And like basically the Windows Explorer is like your desktop. If you're a Mac guy, it's the Finder, right?
There's a ton of tasks.
And they're all like hidden in menus and stuff. And you know, people don't use the ones in the, you know, the hidden ones. So their conclusion was that they should go and make all those tasks more easily accessible. The other conclusion could be that basically maybe they aren't used much because people don't need them that often, so they're better tucked away. But they said it's because they're not easily accessible. So they showed off a new version of the, one would assume, default Windows Explorer window.
Has the ribbon, like, word and stuff.
And I don't know your thoughts. To me, I was like, it was bizarre. There are literally about 50 different buttons and arrows facing different ways in the thing. We'll put a link to it in show notes. It was like, it was one of those things where I saw it. I'm like, oh, if any – we're computer literate people. I had no idea what the hell was going on.
The thing I did notice,
saw that, like, what would they think?
Yeah, but what I did notice is like there were like four huge buttons,
right?
And it was like copy, paste, delete, and like move. And they were huge, impossible to miss buttons. That made sense because that's what your eyes go right to.
Right.
But there was a lot. I mean,
they had a button for invert selection. When's the last time you had the need to do an invert selection on a desktop?
It's very similar to the ribbon. Well, the ribbon in Outlook, the new Outlook and Word, and it is off-putting at first, but I have found after a very short while of having it, I'm able to navigate very quickly and easily through it. But the one thing they did show on there, which I guess is part of Windows 7 already, I had no idea, is like you can hit like Control Tab, and it shows you all the keyboard shortcuts to all those buttons.
Oh, cool!
I was like, what? I didn't even know that.
That's
I tried it on my computer. I was like, oh, wow, that's cool.
That's very
cool. I don't know if it seemed any easier than the original one.
I mean, I got to say, and it's very interesting to see them counterpoint with Lion, right? Where Apple is basically taking away
everything.
They're going minimal as possible and saying, you know, and they're all about shortcuts and like, you know, ironically enough, right clicks and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And to me, it was so off-putting. Like okay, I'm the Mac guy, right? But to me, it was like a total freaking mess. Like I couldn't even understand what they were thinking. If their conclusion was that people don't use tasks because they're hidden, it's like then you're assuming that your users are morons and can't find anything. So you're basically right. saying our interface sucks and people can't find these things and that's not why, and that's why they're not using it versus – you know, maybe they don't use it because they don't need it that much. And also, I guess they're collecting all this data, which makes sense about, you know, what people use stuff and how they access and that kind of stuff. So
I mean,
if you don't want your computer makers doing that, don't click the give, you know, give info to the, you know, the mothership company and all OSs. Basically.
On seven, they kind of went the route of Mac OS. They stripped everything out of the Explorer. There's nothing in here.
Yeah.
Which like you have to right click to even get to certain things and it drives me a little nuts.
Yeah, is it?
Like folder options and things that I use. I mean, I'm a power user, so it's different the way I use it.
And what's your impression for, I mean, obviously you work in IT, you work with a lot of, you know, regular people, quote unquote. What's your impression in terms of how they see the difference in that kind of interface between like this and XP or whatever?
They don't use it much.
Right.
Like they have – I don't think people use it that much.
Right.
In general. Like I don't think they navigate that way. They go to the folder that they like and they navigate within that folder. They go – they drag stuff. They drag lots of dragging from the desktop to the folders.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest thing. It's – you know, I don't see people that often using the select and copy and paste and folder view and options. Like in general – I don't, you know, the normal user.
Most people don't even worry about the file system. Yeah. It's all about the apps. I mean, everybody seems to do their stuff within apps.
Yeah. But I do, you know, like people like to have the big thing is they like to have the shortcuts to the things they access the most, whether it's in a sidebar in a Finder window or an Explorer window on Windows, you know, or a shortcut on the desktop. That seems to be the biggest thing where they can just drag to the left or drag to the desktop or vice versa. So, you know, maybe these OS makers have to, you know, should kind of think about that a little more.
It is interesting. It's I love that Microsoft's saying how can we make our, you know, our interface more usable. I love that that's the, you know, that's going on in their head.
Whether they get it right or not is a different story, but
yeah, that's fantastic.
Coming from a great place actually. Yeah.
Like I said, the conclusions, I guess, you know, we'll see, and especially in counterpoint to the Metro UI, which is touch-based, tiles, minimalist.
Yeah. Well, I think that's why some of these buttons are so huge in the Explorer. Like the main ones, the cut, copy, paste, and delete. Like they're massive buttons on there.
But then you get into that point too about switching between which one. And I'm just very curious to see what their solution is going to be because we talked about this before. I am not sold yet on the notion that they can go and do both and how that's going to affect, you know, the ecosystem, you know, long term.
I don't know.
It is
cool that they've been, you know, they stripped it and are developing from the ground up. Code-wise and everything.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Well, and especially if they do make that jump to ARM, they kind of have to.
Yeah.
Very curious.
I'm excited because that the Windows 8 beta is around the corner and I'm going to jump on that. I can't wait to try it out.
Very, very cool.
I've always liked to get on board of the new Windows betas. Even when Windows Me came out, I was – you even remember that? Windows Millennium Edition.
Oof. But, you know, it's always exciting, you know, following an industry when it's approaching an inflection point. So, you know, awesome stuff.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay, other cool stuff. Oh, this is interesting. We, you know, and you and I got a little heated conversation about this earlier.
Better for off air.
It's all good. Flash, right? Flash on iOS devices has been a long-standing point of contention, you know.
By the way, before we even get into that, I read an article just about this, which is different than my view, and I thought it was interesting. There's this guy Tony Bradley writes for PC World, I think. He's been doing – God, I think it's him. I hope I'm referencing the right guy. He's been doing these sessions of 30 days with certain devices, 30 days with an iPad as opposed to the laptop, 30 days with this. You know.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's actually been cool. So one of his things was the iPad instead of his notebook and you know, went 30 days with it. And one of the days he talked about Flash. And it was very interesting because he – It didn't seem to make a difference,
huh?
To him, and this is a power user,
right?
And I was like, wow. There were a couple things, couple specific things, work related that he couldn't do, but in general, like his, you know, he talked about it being not as big as a deal, you know. And I think that's what a lot of people, you know, he noticed it, but it did affect him in what he was doing.
Yeah,
and it really didn't, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, my dad, has an iPhone, and there are a couple work-related, you know, not web apps, but that's not the right term necessarily, but, you know, like, you know, websites that utilize Flash for work stuff that he couldn't, you know, that can't access, and that's been, that's like, you know, a problem and that stuff. Although I don't know if they're still even using that, but you know, there's a couple. You know, obviously Flash is not on iOS devices. There's a couple different components. There are, you know, applications made with Flash that can be games or they can be, you know, all sorts of things.
Advertisement or
yeah,
just
and it could be there's
just
also
animation on a page.
Yeah, so there's like applications. Flash came into play as like a way to make great flashy impressive websites, and there's just plain old video. And, you know, things have evolved back and forth. iOS has never had that. Adobe basically, has their video serving solution decided to go and allow the streaming of iOS-related content. iOS devices, Apple has something called HTTP live streaming, which basically allows you to go and stream video directly to an iOS device. You don't need to wrap it in Flash. You don't need anything proprietary.
Right.
It's just built in. They did a keynote a couple years ago. They streamed it like that.
Mm-hmm.
And this new version of Flash, media server will now allow them to go and on the fly
stream the
HTTP live streaming stuff as long with, Flash to other devices and that kind of thing, which I think is actually really smart on their behalf, as we were talking about, because you get to a point and iOS devices aren't going away. Flash isn't becoming the big, deterrent maybe they thought it would be. So
sure.
They have to either go and get on board and enable that, or they could see people moving to different serving solutions to support that stuff.
Yeah. And I think it's also, obviously it's iOS spurred, but I think maybe they're seeing a trend not just on mobile devices, and they're seeing a trend towards desktops and,
Yeah. One thing they're not doing that bums me out is basically if you have it, if they can do this, they can stream it to the desktop as well. They, however, are not allowing that. They're looking at the user agent of the browser that is accessing stuff. And
right.
If it's a desktop browser, it will still ask you to go and install the Flash player, which is a bummer because I've tried going a while with uninstalling Flash from my system and using it only in Chrome because that has a built-in there.
Mm-hmm.
Because, once again, we've talked about this before, but every time things crash, it happened at work, the only crashes I get are from Flash in my browser, for better or for worse. That's not, in my work computer, it works fine, but when I do have a crash, it is because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd love to be able to go and get away with having that be my primary solution, but every now and then there's a video thing you want to go and do. I would love it if they would just say, okay, if you don't have to install it, if you don't want to, if we can serve it to you direct. But I get that also would go and, they have such a huge install base on the desktop. I think it's still 90 plus. They don't want to give that up because that gives them a lot of leverage in
sure.
terms of their developer tools and that kind of thing. So interesting how this is continuing to evolve.
Yeah, and this was the first kind of flinch that they made was a few weeks back when they decided to allow their authoring tools.
Right.
To convert, the biggest thing was to convert the Flash, I think, to HTML5.
Yeah, and also
part of the
thing,
big authoring tools.
And also for games, I think you could go and they would allow you to go and have a game. You could go and, basically export it, for lack of a better term, as a native app. So
right.
you can get it in the App Store if you
right.
wanted.
Yeah.
So continuing to evolve. And I'm just really glad that Adobe's, it's anytime you have a monopoly on something, it's easy to go and rest on your laurels and let things, languish.
Sure.
I'm glad that this is developing, pushing them forward, making better solutions, easier ways for people to go and deliver content. This is good all around.
Yeah.
Ultimately.
I mean, as far as the video solution goes, I've never thought Flash worked and I never thought it was a good video solution.
Yeah.
It's never worked as it should.
Well, it was designed for animation originally.
Yeah. And I think it's still good for animation and animated sites, and obviously HTML5 is starting to show its teeth and become better, but as far as the video solution goes, I really wish somebody will come up with something that is just better and secure.
Yeah,
because as soon as they do, I think Flash is out the door for video.
Yeah,
because I think it's always been one foot out the door on the video side because it's never worked right.
Yeah,
never. It just never worked right. I would like Silverlight, works way better.
I agree.
And for some reason, it just never kind of took off. But
it's cool. And also, it's interesting too how we're seeing that on the video side, right? And also, the change to touch-based devices is kind of moving people away from using Flash navigation in sites because it's
true,
not
it's
really
different.
Well suited for that. So you're kind of getting hit on all fronts. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah. This server, though, is only for video.
Correct.
Yeah? It's not going to serve Flash animations
this is just
or anything.
Video. This is just a video streaming
solution. I mean, really, at the end of the day, all the big X's people see on their iPad or iPod, that's not going to change. I'm saying this isn't going to make, you can have Flash on the iPad. That's
correct.
Not
and
what
I, and
this
I got to say, can we go and for a second.
It's not what it is.
Just wrap the knuckles of a lot of people in the tech journalism field. I mean,
for their headlines.
Yeah, like,
yeah, a lot of them.
Yeah, and I was surprised because basically we saw a lot of headlines saying like, oh, Adobe brings Flash to the iPad, and like, you know, oh, finally, like, you know, all the iPad owners have been waiting for Flash, and now they can get it. And it's like,
that's not what's happening.
Yeah, no, it's basically saying Adobe's saying, guess what? We'll give you stuff that you can read as well. If anything,
video it's only video yeah. though. That's not all of Flash.
Yeah, it's not Adobe bringing Flash. It's, if anything, it's Adobe. Like you said, it's Adobe not flinching. But it's like, it's I know we all want to make it a good story because it's a great battle story, especially with their CEO and Steve Jobs and the letter and all this kind of stuff. But ultimately, it's, you know, serving the needs of consumers, which is a good thing.
Right.
We don't have to make it an epic battle. You know?
True.
It's not – this is not Sparta.
Yet.
Not yet. But another, you know, going off the Apple thing, you know, we talked about that that Samsung, you know,
injunction.
Yeah, you want to take the lead on that?
We talked about – did we talk about the Germany one?
Yeah.
We did talk about the
preliminary injunction, yeah.
Right. And it was – they had done – there was the preliminary injunction, but then they had ruled that it – that they could sell it, right? Or they didn't rule, but –
well, they basically did a temporary hold throughout all of the EU except for one country.
But then they pulled that, right?
Like Denmark, I want to say something like that. I don't think it got pulled yet. I think it was in contention.
I thought it was like lifted and then now
– correct. I think
it was
right.
Lifted.
Yeah, yeah.
The hold was lifted and then now there was another ruling.
That made it permanent.
Yeah. And
but only in Germany. But no, not across the EU.
Just in Germany.
And the German sales unit.
Right.
Yeah.
Although, that's a big – affected, you know, especially because of the euro and the, you know, I mean, these are little the countries in Europe. It's
and also know, that sets a precedent that, you know, can be probably used, you know, in different. There's a, you know, still a lawsuit pending in Australia, I believe.
Yeah, and what was you found a great quote though about this?
Yeah, it was.
I thought it was just a very telling, interesting quote.
It's fascinating because
released.
Yeah, because this has all been about not about patents or about anything like that. It's basically been all about you know. Dress and look and, you know, feel and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, that was what this injunction was for.
Yeah, there's like a document where, you know, Apple basically, you know, copyrighted the look, you know, design of the iPad, and like that's what this is all being based around. I don't think they actually even looked at the actual device. It's just all based around the drawing because that's what, you know, they have hold of, right?
Right, right.
But the court basically set out, and it was Judge Joanna Breckner Hoffman. And in her verdict, she said, the court is of the opinion that Apple's minimalistic design isn't the only technical solution to make a tablet computer. Other designs are possible. For the informed consumer, there remains the predominant overall impression that the device looks like the iPad. And this is fascinating to me.
It is fascinating. It's a fascinating statement how true that is. I mean, you can obviously do other designs, but even if you do, how different are you going to get? Is it going to be a zigzag? Is it going to be a circle? Is it, you know?
Well, it's that thing. What is?
You know, it's like a computer screen.
Well, what makes up the iPad look? Because if you took off the screen to my laptop, right, it would look like a laptop screen, but it wouldn't look like an iPad. You know, there wouldn't be the rounded corners at a certain angle. There wouldn't be that, you know, wouldn't be right. Black with like a metal strip backing.
Sure.
You know, if you look at it face on face, there are certain, you know, certain things specifically that do look like an iPad. Yes, ultimately just as a rectangle with, you know, with the black border.
Right.
But there are specifics within that that maybe we actually don't even think about because we just see the device or we just see, you know, the screen or we see like, okay, it's a screen with black borders. There are specific things though in terms of, I guess that one thing that they've been talking about is the angle of the as the rounded corners, you know, and also the way it is, you know, the distance between like the corner of the screen and that, you know, and that bezel.
Right.
And those things that are specific and if you look at it, they do bring to mind an iPad immediately.
Sure. But at what point does it not – at what point – is it okay? Is it if a little quarter of an inch in the corner? Is
I don't
it,
know.
You know what I mean? It's like
does everything
it's such
have to have square corners now? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean it's a difficult thing to prove, and not to prove, just to do differently.
Yeah, but the fact
for
that
function.
Yeah, but the fact that she said, you know, they are possible, right. As in basically you can try, and it seems like she thought they tried to copy the iPad versus trying to differentiate. That I think is fascinating.
Right. Yeah, I think that's true. But I mean, you know, the monitor thing was actually a good point you brought up because if not laptop monitor, but if you go to a store of Fry's or sure. A Best Buy and you look at the monitors, I mean, to differentiate between, you know, there's probably 20 panel monitors that look identical.
Oh, or flat screen TVs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like,
yeah. Well, also, it's, yeah, I don't know. That's
it's
very
hard.
True.
Like what?
And I wonder if TV designs, like, you know, Pioneer used to have that Elite brand. I think they brought it back recently. But, you know, they had, you know, a specific look. I wonder if that was ever copyrighted, you know, certain things like that. Like, the Panasonic, you know.
I'm sure it was.
Like, those Panasonic, I have a Panasonic flat panel. They had those great, you know, not industrial, but, like, you know, wasn't
the industrial one. No, it was the
yeah, and they were
the industrial
fantastic panels, right? You could get them a year before, like, they came
out. Yeah, those were awesome.
They were great. And those did have a very specific look, very minimalist. But you looked at one, and you could walk into a room and say, that's a Pioneer. You would know just by, I mean, excuse me, that's Panasonic, a Panasonic.
Which
just
is Pioneer now anyway. So.
But yeah, but you know what I mean? Like, you would know just like by the size of the bezel, by the lack of markings, by, you know, by the you know, the stand, if it wasn't mounted, you could see it, you know, very clearly what it was. And it was different than a Sony or a Samsung or a Pioneer.
Right.
Because Pioneer was very glossy, you know, all that kind of stuff. You could tell they differentiated because, you know, so they could, you know, there's a notion of brand based on the visual.
Yeah. I mean, like, I can see, let's say the iPad had just a very specific top form factor where it was like a little, you know, curve and a, you know,
right.
thing.
Or like that, the
something
Sony
that
tablets,
you could specific, like, yes. Like yeah. where you could specifically, you know, like see a, I mean, obviously these are designed. I mean, I'm not taking that away, but where you can, to the naked eye, see the design.
Right.
You know, just to anybody, just a quick glance.
Right.
You know, it, iPads are designed very, very well, but you know it's a different thing.
But I'm wondering if they had if the Galaxy Tab had come out and it had the same look, but it did not have that silver border at the top. Does it then look like an iPad? Does it then fall into this problem? Maybe not. I don't know.
I don't know. You know? I don't know. Yeah.
And that's what's interesting. Basically saying it.
And so you know, we'll it's like, and the back's different. You know, so. Does it have to be the front? Does it have to be?
it's
such
it's,
a weird.
It's very interesting.
It's such a fine line. If a line even exists, really. Yeah.
So I'm very curious to see what they do. And I have to say, part of me thinks that this is great because guess what? The iPad design is successful. But, you know, Sony came out with two tablets, very different form factors than the iPad. Interesting.
The Microsoft One looks different.
Yeah. There could be ones that are different and better. I like that people are getting pushed, especially now that we're seeing that maybe this is a thing, this issue of consumer electronics and not broad computing device where,
right.
you know, it's about utility or perceived utility and functionality sure. versus just like whatever,
yeah.
you know.
True.
Make things that are specific for certain purposes.
Yeah.
You know, so cool. I'm very curious to see like, you know, the Kindle tablet. I'm sure the Kindle tablet will be very, very careful to not look like an iPad in this way.
Maybe. I don't know.
You know, we'll see.
well, obviously it's going to be 7 inches, so.
Yeah, but oh, then 7 inches. Speaking of, there was a 7-inch Galaxy Tab that was being you know debuted at yes. IFA, which is a you know a Consumer Electronics Trade Show in Berlin this year. This was last week. Had it out for one day with stickers on it that said "Not for sale in Germany."
Yeah,
because it's part of the Galaxy Tab line. Blah blah blah. Right. The next day, it vanished.
Bye bye.
Samsung put out their press spokesman talked about it, referring to it only as the device.
That's weird.
Did not say Galaxy Tab. They said the device only, and they're basically allowing the Galaxy Note, which is their you know another tab that does not look as much like the iPad as the Tab right. does. 5 inches, I believe, isn't it?
Yeah, it was something like that.
Basically, taking the forefront of that. So clearly, you go okay. Apple, you know, say you know no good. The fact they're not just calling it by the Tab makes me think it's directly related to this thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Very interesting. I don't like that stuff is being pulled off floors personally. That is out there. I like people being able to see different options of things.
Yeah.
At the same time, if you're getting you know beat down and the court says that, then the court says that. I don't know.
It's true.
You know,
no,
it's that fine line. It's like I do believe that people should be able to go and protect you know what are their innovations, but also I like lots of I like the new shiny.
Yeah, me too.
you know.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
So we'll be curious to see what happens. If anything, I'm sure that Samsung's next offerings will be very, very different and interesting and innovative. So at the very least, I'm excited to see what their next gen of products is going to look like.
Very, very, yeah. very, very curious.
And also curious to see what the iPhone looks like because there was an icon that leaked from a build of iOS 5 that was supposedly for the iPhone 5.
Oh,
that
yeah,
looked very much looked like a Galaxy S2, which makes me wonder, is there something in play with Apple wanting to see early, you know, builds, you know, looks at their device and vice versa? Did something leak early? What happened? We don't know.
What? Yeah.
Or it could have just been a random icon that just was low res, so it just looked like crap and nobody
you
knows
have
what
no
it
idea.
Is. But
right.
very curious to see what the next design of the iPhone is, whether it's now or next year.
We
very,
will
very
know
curious.
Soon.
Yeah, and that's actually, that is one thing, you know, iPhone rumors have been coalescing. Looks like October 7th is a very, very likely release date. Sprint has put out that blocked out vacation days from September 30th to the 14th, I think, of October for their employees.
Mm-hmm.
Looks very, very likely that Sprint will be getting the iPhone now. And
I'm feeling it's going to be all carriers.
I think so, too.
Yeah. I think it's going to be, and I think that's going to be a a boom.
Yeah. Well, and also
big bomb drop.
It's making me very excited. Sprint unlimited data plan. Reports coming out that they're going to maintain their unlimited data plan to put them at a competitive advantage against Verizon and AT&T, which I would love. Wouldn't it be great to have the carriers finally competing against each other?
I know. They every now and then they do.
Yeah.
And then when one decides not to and then can get away with it, the other one's backtrack.
Yeah.
I hate it.
But that's what I like, because if you can argue, obviously Droid is so, and it's incredible success. But in terms of like the premier device in the US, it is still the iPhone. And if everybody has that device, it basically puts the carriers, and they have no place but to compete on plans and on pricing.
Yeah.
There's no exclusivity giving anybody a leg up anymore.
I really hate this trend of removing the unlimited data.
I agree.
Hate it so much. And, I understand there are a small percentage of the population that abuses it and that are constantly using it for huge downloads. So don't get rid of the unlimited. There's a way to track that 1% and throttle them.
I don't even think it's about
that. Do something.
I think that's all BS. I think it's they basically know that we're going data only. And as soon as 2 or 3 years, I bet we'll be seeing phones that may not even need to have a voice plan. They can be,
Over
IP.
It's like your home phone where you used to pay for minutes back in the day, a long time ago.
Yeah.
But it would be like if they started to go unlimited and then they went back on it. That's what this is like. Like there was unlimited and now they're getting rid of it.
Or you mean sort of like phone companies saying like, we have 3 tiers of SMS plans, but now we're going to take away the middle tier so you can only do unlimited or nothing at all.
Right.
So we can charge you $25 for SMS.
That's right. All that SMS is going to be free because everybody's starting to jump onto these other services.
Once again, why they want to go into their data. They're not dumb. Once they get LTE up, it will be fast enough, I think, once it's fully deployed, to go and basically get rid of voice services. I really think that's where it's going. I think it's going to get there quick.
It might not need to, though. I mean,
but why not? I think it's easier. I think it's easier for everybody if they can make it all data. And plus, other rumors, Apple's new iPod Touch, rumors, of course, going to have 3G capability. No word if it's going to have like a microphone or that kind of thing.
Curious.
But if you have a 3G device, makes sense, obviously, because of iCloud. Of course, it makes sense for them to do that, right?
I was going to say, I wonder if they're going to do something similar to the Kindle, the current Kindle,
yeah,
with their data. Like it's provided by Verizon or something, but you have the Kindle, you have data access.
I don't know.
When you have the Kindle, I don't think you pay for it.
It's all built into the price.
Right.
But I think the deal with the Touch, they want to make it really, really cheap. Because it's not going to be subsidized like the iPhone is.
Because
you won't need to get the data.
Right.
But maybe they can.
I wonder.
And also, I don't know.
If they do the scan and match for the $25 a year, if that includes your data on the Touch.
I bet not, but.
Be interesting. Be nice.
It'd be nice. But you know what? I don't think that the cell phone companies really, really love the idea of them running these data-only devices out there.
No, probably not.
Because they can still go
and the Kindle, the amount of data that you pull off the Kindle is tiny.
Minimal, yeah. But if you have an iPod Touch that has 3G and you're streaming all your music to it all day long, it's going to be a lot of data.
Yeah, maybe Apple bought one of the bandwidth spectrums that we don't know about.
We could wish.
Oh, we'd know. It's the FCC thing.
Yeah, we definitely
know. That would have been a smart move.
Good and bad, because it wouldn't help them globally. And like all these devices, the global market is almost going to be bigger than the U.S. market. And also, if they go in competition with, AT&T, Verizon, I think it really, really hurts them. Because right now, they need to grow iOS market share, especially with Android. That needs to be their number one priority, which is, I think, why we're going to see it on everything. And also, if they go and – here's another interesting thing, too. What's the difference between an iPod Touch with 3G and an iPhone at that point? Is there one?
Not if you're using Skype.
Yeah, or do you even go and even – they took – one interesting thing, they got rid of an iOS 5, the iPod app is gone, right? It doesn't exist anymore. It's now called Music. Maybe the – and I thought this when I first – the first betas came out and talked to a couple people and they're like, no. Doesn't it make sense though to you in some sense if Apple says, okay, we're getting rid of it altogether? iPod brand retiring. It'll be the one old guy. It'll be – but we're done with it because A, we want to go and increase the numbers of iPhone sales. When people report that, we want to look better for PR reasons. And because it opens up our ability to go and sell products everywhere. So instead of having a cheap phone, instead of selling a 3GS or selling the iPhone 4 next year, what if they go and basically sell a cheap, unsubsidized, lower cost iPhone that you can add voice to if you want?
Oh, that's interesting.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's that iCloud iPhone doesn't cost much.
Maybe.
And then basically everything that's sold then becomes an iPhone. But if you don't want the data plan, you don't need it.
That's very interesting.
But then if you include it, then you can go with this thing. It allows them to go and sell a whole lot more products. I don't know. Interesting. Hmm. And slowly takes away power from the carriers because people can go and just, you know, turn it on and off as they wish, no contracts, because you're not getting anything subsidized.
Right, right.
Which is, I think, where they would like to go. Apple's talking, you know, about 6 months ago about having that. You could have one device that would have, you know, GSM, you know, slot in there and CDMA chips built in, where you wouldn't actually, even like its own proprietary like SIM card, where you could just basically have one phone, wouldn't have to remove or add anything.
Yeah, it wouldn't be.
And iTunes would just plug you between carriers and all carriers.
Yeah.
You could switch it, which of course the carriers hated because they want to lock you in.
Absolutely. That'd be nice. Yeah. Although I do love my iPod. I like having my iPod.
Yeah.
Until somebody can get better battery life, I want my iPod.
What's the battery life on the iPod
Forever.
Touch right now? Is it
forever?
Because you don't. Because you're
using my car for like a week. Yeah, use and currently always using it. Like,
yeah, and you're only using Wi-Fi. That's because it's the data network that kills all these devices ultimately.
Yeah, and I don't. I mean, like, you know, unless I'm at home, I don't pop on the data. So yeah. I, you know, I'm just playing music.
Yeah, it is funny. Like the difference. Like, is it like a week?
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's funny because you know it's
of
basically
like full use. Like,
and here's the
I'm
thing.
Using it in the car every day.
And it's slimmer than the iPhone 4, so you probably figure there's a smaller battery in that. And so without the 3G radio, it's the difference between, you know, like 10, 11 hours and, you know, a week. That's how much power these things, you know, these radios
like,
suck.
It amazes me that I can at points forget to pause my iPod. It will play in the car overnight, and then I still have battery for like 4 days.
That's rad.
Like, that happens all the time.
That's rad.
It's great. I walk in, I turn on the car, and there's music. I was like, man, I got to turn it off. So, all right.
Yeah. Any case, very, very interesting. You know, it's, you know, more than a week into September now. Got to have an announcement, you know, at least have an announcement about, you know, an Apple announcement any day now. It's got to happen soon.
Yeah, there'll be something soon.
So we'll have more, you know, and obviously we'll be covering that, you know, rapidly. And I have to say, you know, as recently as a week ago, I was saying, I'm not going to upgrade. I don't want to upgrade until I can get 4G. And now I'm thinking, it's the new shiny. It's good.
You have a heart. You have a problem.
I'm going to get the new phone.
Well, we both do.
Yeah.
I understand.
It's going to be nice.
Trust me.
It's going to be a nice phone.
It's going to be a nice phone.
You know? They have, like, by the way, real quick aside, then we have to go into food. Apple released a new beta for iTunes.
I saw that.
Match.
Yeah.
Finally, for the first time, this is the third or fourth one, was now able to go and sync all of my collections. So they keep moving forward. You know, progress being made. And iTunes Match just keeps getting better with every, you know, upgrade of the iOS or the iTunes. I'm getting very, very excited about the service.
That'll be neat.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see when it's like fully functional.
Definitely.
You know, I think I almost want you to, once it's like not beta, to get rid of your stuff.
Well, I think they're going to wipe everything before it goes live.
Oh, you think so?
They've said
as much. I was like, I want you to resync when it's
good. I want the full experience because it's been a rocky road thus far. That's totally my plan. Yeah, the only reason I haven't tried that already is because I think they closed the beta. So if I was to turn it off now, I couldn't get back in.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, probably smart.
Yeah, but I already have my subscription paid for. So no, I will be absolutely doing that. Because the difference, even on this one too, about 5 minutes and it started going and have everything matched before versus the 45 minutes to 50 minutes it was taking originally. So
right,
good.
Right.
But food, sir.
Food. This is my favorite time of year.
Because it's my birthday?
No.
Oh, okay. That's fair.
It's your favorite time of year. This is my September comes and we start to see the arrival of seasonal food items.
Like in Halloween seasonal?
Like in fall, Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas.
Autumn
seasonal is what is around the corner right now. And there is...
autumn seasonal.
Yes, the autumn seasonal brings us many, many drinks from the Starbucks. They just released my version of crack, which would be the pumpkin spice latte. I love. And I can't stress how much. I mean, I love cookies and I love ice cream. I love the pumpkin spice latte. I am addicted to the pumpkin spice latte. And I, you know, I drink coffee. I'm not like a soda guy. I don't really drink sugary drinks. It's not my thing. This, and I mean, this is all, you know, it's a latte with pumps of, you know, syrup in it. I'm addicted to it. It's amazing. It's cool because like at this time of year also, So this is Starbucks, and they do the pumpkin spice latte. Coffee Bean does a pumpkin pie latte. But the pumpkin spice is not – does not taste like – it's not a – it's not really a pumpkin flavor. The pumpkin pie does have a really strong pumpkin flavor to it. Pumpkin spice is like the spices they use in pumpkin pie.
Right.
You know, so it's this very fall – the smell kind of is this nostalgic thing to it.
And it's the spice that – I mean, I had a – I got it.
That's what gives you that sense
a couple years ago. Yeah, like that's what makes it magical.
Yeah.
And even when you drink it, you actually –
it is magical.
In your mind, you actually see like a mug warm. And you see the spice atop of it, right? You know
yes,
what I mean? You
yes.
actually see the commercial in your head.
Oh, yeah. Totally. You know, it comes with a little whipped cream on top and – I mean, I could go every day having one of these. I really could. This time of year, it gets bad because I'll be driving around town. I'm driving all over all day. And I'm just like, ooh, Starbucks, pumpkin spice latte for the next 4 months and for the next 2 months until, and I'll get into it then, we get the gingerbread latte. So they keep feeding my addiction all through January. Now, I normally, like, it's been really hot out here in California. And,
yes.
You know, normally I like to not have the pumpkin spice until it cools down a little bit. But this morning, I was at Starbucks, and there was little Mr. Pumpkin Spice Latte saying, drink me, Scott. You know you want me.
What does Mr. Pumpkin Spice Latte look like when he's talking to you?
Well, it kind of looks like whipped cream with eyes and a mouth.
Does he have a mustache? I imagine something from like those, you know. Rudolph cartoons, you know?
That's really funny. Like the snowman from
yeah,
the Rudolph
exactly.
cartoon. Kind of. Kind of.
Like hello, a white, Scott. White man. Why don't you drink me?
Starbucks should listen, and they should have Mr. Pumpkin Spice Latte as their spokesman.
Dude, we could, you know, brand geniuses right here.
Right.
Magic happening.
I mean, come on. So Pumpkin Spice Latte, they also at the same time – they release this. They also have the pumpkin cream cheese muffin.
Oh, I've not heard about this.
Oh, yes. This has been going on for a couple of years, too. Now, the problem – here's the problem. I love the – it's a pumpkin muffin with cream cheese in the middle and kind of comes up in through the middle and a little bit on the top. Mm-hmm. It's good. And it's great. It's great. Each bite, you get cream cheese in it. You get the pumpkin. It's like, you know, it's like a pumpkin loaf. however, here's where the problem comes in. One cannot really have a pumpkin spice latte and a pumpkin cream cheese muffin. They don't really go together. Like if you have a cup of coffee and a pumpkin cream cheese, you know, it works. So the debate always occurs in my mind.
Pumpkin overload, not
right.
acceptable.
Which do I want? Do I want this or do I? And I always instinctively want to order both, but I know I'm not going to like both at the same time. So, you know, do I forgo my crack and get the pumpkin muffin, or do I just let the pumpkin muffin slide? It's
pumpkin,
hard.
Pumpkin loaf.
Well, they do have pumpkin loaf too.
Do you know that? Here's what I see. I haven't had the muffin. Just hearing this though, hearing you describe it, I love pumpkin cheesecake.
Oh,
like
yeah.
I love cheesecake, but like
and, pumpkin cheesecake. Mm-hmm.
And there's this amazing place on Larchmont. We have to go. Actually, we should go.
Oh, speak to me. Tell me what is.
We have to go.
Come on.
Larchmont Bungalow. We need to go in a couple hours when they have all their stuff up. We need to talk
oh,
about
they do
the,
like fall.
We have to talk about the apple. Cheesecake. We have to talk about some stuff. We'll talk about this off air and figure out. We'll do a bit on the show.
Okay.
But I love pumpkin cheesecake. But that only works, you know, with coffee. You know, you need coffee
right.
to offset
you need that,
it.
You
yeah,
need
regular
the
coffee.
Yeah, I agree. The sweet with the bitter.
Yeah,
you know, is a good combination. I always find.
I agree.
Jared in our chat room, you're getting a lot of shout outs today. Said the pumpkin latte and their frosted gingerbread loaf combination. Now that sounds like a wonderful combination.
He who controls the spice controls the universe.
Sad but true.
Oh.
Sad but true.
Rocking the dune, ladies and gentlemen.
So I downed this pumpkin spice latte this morning pretty quickly.
It was very funny. You came in and I'm like, oh, you know, what's the food section? You like set up your cup. I'm like, oh, I have it right here. I'm like, I don't understand. You're just holding your coffee. You're like, no. This
oh,
is it.
Oh, yeah. So anybody out there that enjoys the pumpkin spice latte, it's live, baby.
Do they have a version of it in the Frappuccino line? Like so you can have it cold. Or I guess you get it
well,
iced.
Nowadays you can make your own Frappuccino. Don't they have that deal where like you can choose any
know.
Of the flavors?
I know they changed it so you can go and get, you know, soy. Which
I think
you
can get
before.
I think you can get any mixed. Of the flavors now. So you probably can, which interesting.
Interesting. I don't know.
Or just an iced pumpkin spice latte.
Be good.
Ooh, that may happen this weekend.
Interesting. Interesting. Now, what size of this do you usually get?
It depends. I mean, I start to go through a little overload.
Right.
Because I go for the bigger ones. I go for the medium, you know.
Well, you know, so you don't get the – what's the big one that they introduced? Like the
– Oh, the Super Grande one?
Yeah, I don't know what it's called. The Vente Vente, whatever it's called.
Yeah, the never mind. The big one.
Yeah.
I was going to say something inappropriate.
Say it.
No.
I'll cut it out.
Bleep me out.
I'll cut it. Say
no.
it. No. Say it.
Big ass latte. The B-A-L.
I think we can start a whole coffee shop based around that idea.
B-A-L? B-A-Ls.
Now, the Venti.
Balls?
The Venti is the original large. They had a larger
Super
than
Venti,
large.
Yeah.
But it had like a different name.
Yeah. Well, and they actually made fun of it in some TV show or movie.
But now I don't see it. It's like they pulled it.
They might have gotten rid of it. They might have gotten rid of it.
I'm looking this up. I got to know right
you
now.
You got
the Trenta.
Is that what it was called?
It was called the Trenta.
Wow.
Because I think it was 30 ounces or something.
Oh,
crazy.
That makes sense. That makes sense. So anyway, Starbucks pumpkin spice latte out for your taste enjoyment. And I will be having one every morning until the next thing comes out while we record Tech Bacon.
Next, when you get up, can you get me one too?
Yes, I will get you one next time, Brian.
I think I have to get one.
You want
now
soy?
After the show. I have to go.
Soy or regular?
No, I go regular.
Just go full. I
got to go to authentic.
Would you go 2% or would you go whole milk?
I go whole, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now you're talking.
Of course. Don't mess with perfection.
Okay. On that note.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. Hope you had a good time. If you dig the show, please stop by iTunes and give us a rating. It's a great way for new people to find the show. We're also available on Twitter. I'm at BC Bishop.
I'm at ScottyG7.
You can also email us or hit us up at techbacon.net. That is an alarm on my cell phone. Anyway, I'm Brian.
I'm Scott.
Take care, guys.